Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and for this episode, I don't even know the number of this episode, I think it's 164, I am joined by my good friends, Martin Slam Duncan of the Fastball Special, and everybody's favorite co-host, other than Daft J, of course, Mr. Shane Heron. How's it going, boys?
Hi. I thought I was everybody's favorite.
You both are everybody's favorite. You both are.
Other than Daphne.
Yeah, Daphne's everybody's favorite. How you guys doing? I know we've been talking for the last 20 minutes trying to figure out Martin's technical difficulties, but...
Good.
What's
good.
New and exciting in your lives?
We got it sorted.
Got it all sorted out. Everyone,
Do we have it sorted? Is it sorted?
I think so.
Sorted out.
I think it's sorted out.
All right.
Are you recording?
I am recording, yes.
Okay, good.
So what's new and exciting in both of your lives? Let's do a little bit of catch-up. We haven't spoken to each other in a while.
Okay, well, I think we've gone to Comic-Con since last time we talked.
That's true.
That's how long ago it was.
I know, it's like a month ago.
Yeah, Comic-Con was fun.
Shane, how about you? How's the Cauldron signing, the tour that you guys are doing with Sam Noir booking all of your dates for you?
And no, that was the last issue. This one, we're doing a more conservative tour of signings.
Oh, you guys did you were at the art show. Tell me about the art show. I didn't get a chance to attend, but you guys were both through there.
Yeah, you don't care.
Yeah.
Art show was cool.
Yeah, Martin came and he documented. He made actually a pretty good YouTube video about it. Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I didn't.
He's one of five that's seen it.
I will watch it.
You didn't show up, but you couldn't even watch the video recapping it?
I will watch the video recapping. Relax.
We see how we support you. That's
right. I thought you would want to live vicariously through the YouTube video.
I will. Sheesh.
The art show was actually really great.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was better than I thought it was going to be.
You guys didn't do it for issue one, right?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. There's 66 views. There you go. It'll be 67 if Eric could watch it.
I will. I'll watch it twice to give you... I'll watch it three times to give you 69.
All right.
It's a family show.
Yes.
There you go.
And Shane, last weekend... Was it last weekend you were at Sarnia?
Yeah, we always go to Sarnia. We've been doing it for the last few years. Ricky didn't make it last year because we had that giant ice storm.
That's right.
But I drove up in the ice storm with Sam Noir and almost died a bunch of times.
Isn't that where you're moving when you grow up?
I'm going to retire. But also, Ricky stole that from me and said it in an interview.
Oh. I said
I'd retire in Sarnia, and then Eric asked him what he'd like to do when he gets older. He said he'd like to retire in Sarnia.
Yeah, it was, if you could live in any city, where would it be? And he chose Sarnia. Of all the cities in the world, that's the one he went with.
But we like Sarnia. The people are very nice there.
And what's the show like? Is it worth driving all the way out to Sarnia for this show?
Maybe not for you guys, as like if you're just going to interview or as fans, because like their big guest this year was the Brooklyn Brawler from wrestling.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool, but... And then they had one of the kids from the It movie was there. That was like but he was only there for like 3 hours. But for us, like the guy who runs the show and he has the comic shop in town, his name's Trent. And then all the other guys like Terry, Mike, JJ, they all put the show together. And they're just like the sweetest guys and they always take care of us. We get like, you know, we're guests up there. We get a free table. And then the first year we did it, we were in a Holiday Inn in one of those like hotel rooms. The rooms in the lobby of the hotel, like those big ones you rent out. And I remember telling Ricky, like, this is going to suck. It's so small. But I think they had, the first show, they had maybe like 800 people came. And I would say like half of them bought our books. Like, it was nuts.
That's pretty good, though. Like,
that's great. That's great.
And I guess there's not a lot going on in Sarnia when there's a Comic-Con. Like, everyone in town shows up and just, like, everyone just buys all kinds of books. It's really great.
That's awesome. So what's the next show that you're going to be tabling at, and what's the next show you plan to be going to, Martin?
TCAF.
TCAF? Yeah, that's a good show.
We got a Cauldron table for TCAF.
Oh, nice. And what's the date for TCAF?
I don't know the exact date. It's the second weekend in May.
Okay.
The first weekend is Free Comic Book Day, and then the next weekend after, it's usually like the Mother's Day weekend, whatever that weekend is.
Okay.
It's May 11th and 12th.
Okay.
That's the
one. Just before the long weekend.
Yeah, I might hit that one this year. I haven't been to a TCAF yet.
So. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Got to go to TCAF, man.
Yeah, it's a cool show.
Something always seems to come up, but I'm going to try to hit this one.
Yeah, no, that was a cool show last year. And are any of you guys going to Niagara Comic Con?
I'm going to try Niagara.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You're not doing that one, Shane?
No, we did it last year, and then we did it a few years before that, and I forgot that show's not very good for selling comic books.
Mm.
They don't. No one buys indie comic books there.
Really?
Yeah, they just go to see like wrestlers and stuff.
Why do you think that is? Is it just the makeup of the show is more the attraction is celebrity?
I think that, and I don't know, like, Niagara's a really weird place because people from Toronto or just tourists in general, you always see that sort of, like, Clifton Hill, like, Lundy's Lane, that whole sort of, like, crappy Atlantic City part of Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. But if you, like, see the rest of the town, it's, like, really, like, kind of, like, trashy, like, small town. Like, it's they're kind of gross people.
And that might be the reason why they won't buy your books now.
Yeah. You know what? You're not selling yourself there.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
But George Perez is going to be there, so I really want to go.
Oh, I love George Perez.
Yeah, I think this is his last time coming to Canada, apparently.
Yeah. So I really want to go to that.
I'd like to go just for that as well. And Starlin are there. Him and Starlin.
Yeah.
Which is
Mike Reed's going to be there as well.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. And there's a couple, I think Undertaker is scheduled to be there, which is a pretty cool get.
He is, yeah.
Would you get him to sign the title?
The belt?
Yeah.
I think he's charging a ridiculous amount, though. Like.
Oh, really?
I'm getting a little tired of spending that much kind of money.
How much?
And lining up for like 5 hours. And I'll probably only be there for one day, right? So I don't want to spend the whole day in line.
How much?
I don't know, we'll see.
How much would you be willing to spend for a George Perez signature?
Oof. You think... Oh, I guess he will charge, won't he?
I imagine, but I don't know what it would be. What would be the max for you?
I don't even know what I would get him to sign.
You want me a Benny comics?
You know what I should get him to sign is my Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, well, him and Starlin will be there.
Yeah, I should get him to sign that, like the big gauntlet thing.
Actual gauntlet, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... Could they get Ron Lim to come, too?
I'm not sure. He might actually be listed. I could be wrong, but definitely Perez, Starlin are there, and a couple of big names. It's a pretty good show, actually, for Niagara.
It is.
They've been getting.
I actually like the Niagara show.
Yeah,
it's a good show.
Yeah,
it's a good show.
So speaking of wrestlers, did any of you guys watch WrestleMania 35? Do any of you guys still do that?
I did. It was trash.
What? Why was it trash?
I don't know. It was just
too long.
You know
what?
There's a couple of things, and I don't follow wrestling as much anymore. But there was a match, a final match of Kurt Angle, which was just a joke, pretty much. I don't even know the guy that he wrestled, and he just went out like really quick. It was supposed to be his farewell retirement match. It was a joke. The female match was okay. It was okay, but I don't know. It didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
Other than that, I didn't. The Hunter entrance was pretty fun.
And the match itself? How was the match?
Same old. Same old stuff, right? Like, yeah. I didn't think it was that great. Actually, it was kind of a dull WrestleMania. No huge surprises. I usually like surprises from like old wrestlers coming in. They did a little bit of a cameo by who is that dude? Oh, the old DX guys.
X-Pac and not, Triple not, H.
No, not X-Pac.
New Age Outlaws.
Shawn Michaels.
No, actually, it wasn't DX. Who are those dudes? I don't know. They'll come back to me.
Was the Honky Tonk Man there?
Hogan was there, right? Nope. Hogan made an appearance, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. It didn't do too much for me, to be honest.
Yeah, you know why? Because you're an adult.
No, man. I don't know. Maybe.
I think for me, the era for wrestling is...
Razor Ramon.
Oh, the Click.
Oh, the NWO.
Yeah, Razor Ramon.
Kevin Nash.
So he did it. Kevin Nash, yeah. So they showed up as doctors.
Oh, gosh.
For, like, a little skit thing. But
how did Razor Ramon look? Because the last video I saw, he's like, well, Scott Hall is his name. Yeah, he was doing a wrestling match, and they were, like, holding him up. He was, like, falling all over the place. Yeah, he was, like, fucked up.
He looked rough.
He apparently got his life in order because DDP took him and Snake in.
With DDP Yoga?
Yeah, and he helped really rehabilitate like their entire
life. He's doing good work, man, that DDP guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's helping a lot of guys. Jake the Snake, he turned him around.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys. Good for him.
Yeah. No.
The Nipsey Hussle of wrestling?
No. Daphne said, is he the Nipsey Hussle of wrestling? No, not quite. He's more like the Tony Robbins of wrestling, DDP.
Kind of, yeah. But he's pretty genuine. I don't know, but some of the saddest things I see is when I go to these Comic Cons and I see these old wrestlers and they're totally broken.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they're trying to sell $5 pictures, and I'm like, I remember when these guys sold venues that were like 50,000, 60,000 people.
Right.
And now they're like sitting at a little table, you know.
Right.
Signing a $5 video, you know, thing, and they can't walk, and they're all in pain, and they have, you know, crutches and all sorts of stuff. So it's kind of sad, man. I guess they didn't really take care of their money when they had it.
But. No, and I don't think they made that much money either. Like,
no, and they're all on painkillers, and they got addicted to them, and their bodies are broken. It's kind of sad.
I think the industry is different now because they have all of these things to protect their careers, like concussion protocols and all of these things where they're even insured. Back then, wrestlers, if you didn't wrestle, you didn't get paid, and that was it. You had to show up, and it was like a circus act. So I think they have a better lifestyle now, but I don't think the product is necessarily as good as the era that we're going to talk about today. Do you guys want to get into the book?
So is this a giant-sized issue?
Yeah, this is a giant-sized episode of The Cave of Solitude, exactly. Martin always comes up.
Can you put a rim shot in there?
Yeah, I'll add that. I'll add that. So today we're going to talk about, this is our second official book club that we do together. The first one was Planetary last year, and this one is going to be...
We're going to do one a year?
No, we're going to do more than one a year now that you have Skype. Now that you can actually like connect on another level.
Yeah, you know who can't? Martin.
Hey, we got it worked out. I got it worked out.
So for this book club, we're going to do Andre the Giant, Life and Legend from Box Brown. I know there's a couple of different Andre the Giant graphic novels out there, but how did you guys find this one yourselves?
I read the wrong one.
Yeah. Martin read the wrong one and had to read this one really fast.
No, I had actually heard this was pretty great. I picked this up at Gotham Central. So we always shout out to Gotham Central and Carlos. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm an old school wrestling fan too, right? So the subject matter already appealed to me. And, you know, being a comic fan. And I heard it was an awesome book. So I ended up picking up, I think we talked about doing this, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
So I read it way back then.
Yeah, me too. I had to reread last night and partially in the bathtub today.
Yeah. and then we talked about doing this. So I went on Comixology because I'm kind of reading all my comics on there lately. And put in Andre the Giant, and I picked the wrong book. I picked Andre the Giant Closer to Heaven. So I read that one, and I'm like... It seems a little different, but I read it so long ago I didn't realize, and then I realized, oh, it's two different books. But
so is that one also like sort of, I guess, like a biopic, or what do you call it, biography?
Yes. Yeah, it's actually very similar. The points are almost identical. So the Andre the Giant Life and Legend book, the one I guess we're really talking about today. You know, it starts off, you know, with the Hogan interview and that sort of stuff, and then it goes back. The other one really starts off when he's sort of, you know, goes back in time right away to when he was a kid and born his parents and how he grew up on the farm and that sort of stuff. But very similar. The key points are the same, where it goes to like the Japan days, when he meets McMahon, all that sort of stuff. All that's in there.
Mm.
The one thing though I will say, and just because I can't, is it does discuss his daughter a little bit more in the other book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In
the Bakuman one or the one you read?
The one I read, the Closer to Heaven one.
Yeah, because in the Box Brown one, it's just like a couple pages. I think they mention the daughter, but not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a lot, but it does talk a little bit about it. But, yeah, sort of how that impacted him. And but anyway, I guess we'll get into that when we get into the book.
So what are your guys' memories of Andre as a performer? Like, for me, I was 3 years old at WrestleMania 3, so I remember him in the twilight of, like, he was already, yeah, you know, the legend, and he was on his way out. He was in a tag team with Haku and whatnot, but I didn't see him of what, you know, became the building blocks of what Andre the Giant was. Do you have that recollection at all, Martin?
I mean, I probably caught him a little earlier, but still in the WWF days, okay, I guess, at the time. So he was, I mean, he was the monster, but he was the face for the longest time, even in WWF. And then and then obviously the big heel turn with Hogan. But he would often have his battles with Big John Studd. Was kind of like, yeah, the other monster of WWF at the time, or King Kong Bundy was the other, you know, monster at the time. But I think the biggest turning point in, you know, was obviously the Hulk Hogan match for me, right? And they even, I remember they made, I don't think they talked about it. Do you remember they made a belt to be able to fit Andre the Giant? Because they thought that, they made it so that Andre was going to beat Hogan, and they had to make a bigger belt because the Hogan belt wouldn't fit him.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that? Yeah, they actually made a bigger belt, and they showed it because they're like, yeah, Andre's going to beat Hogan, so we got to make sure we have a belt that's going to fit him. So they tried to sell it very well.
Yeah, no, they did a great job back in those days because they kayfabed so well that even outside of the ring, like, you had the heels would stay at a certain hotel or have to drive together, and the baby faces could only go to a certain place, so they were always apart from one another so that there would be no nothing would ruin storyline. They sold it out everywhere. Like, if you broke your arm, you literally had to go around with a cast for the next year to make people believe your arm was really broken. It's crazy. True. Yeah.
So my funny, like, a little digression, but my cousin used to work at the airport. Right, so he used to see all the wrestlers come in, and when Randy Savage came in, Randy Savage came in, he played the part, and he got Elizabeth to carry all his baggage for him.
Oh my goodness!
As he came in, yeah.
Yeah, they really had to sell it.
He absolutely played it all the whole time. It was great.
So what did you?
Yeah, guys, I was actually watching this YouTube video, and they were asking Hulk Hogan, like, who Andre didn't like for real. And apparently he really didn't like Randy Savage, Macho Man. So, like, when you watch the fights with him, he's actually, like, he's being so rough on him. He's, like, pulling him by his hair and really throwing him around, like, a lot harder. And it was also Big John Studd, he was, like, really rough with. And then Iron Sheik, he didn't like the Iron Sheik at all.
Yeah.
It actually talks a little bit about that in... I'm going to talk about the other one more than this one. But it talks a little bit about that. Actually, it talks a little bit about how he beat up Hogan originally, because he was sort of the new guy, and he kind of put Hogan in his place initially before they sort of started working together. But he said, or at least in the comic, he said that he respected him because he really beat him down hard, but Hogan never complained about it, right? And he said, okay, he sort of earned his respect after that. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, the one thing I heard from every time I listen to, like, a podcast where they bring up Andre or talk about what his reaction was, he was always very skeptical and not friendly to the new big guy. He was the big guy, and if someone came that was a potential threat to his spot, he didn't like them just on principle. That seemed to be the consistent theme. And the other guy I think that he was really rough on was Jake the Snake, because he was terrified of snakes, Andre. But when they would have matches together, he would, like you said, step on his hair and then pull the guy up while his foot was on his hair, sort of thing, which is with a man that size, like if he were to step on you or put you in the corner. There was a couple times too where Jake the Snake had said he'd do his little in the corner, he'd bump the guy like three times and then he would like sit on them. But this time he really leaned into Jake and he passed like a ton of gas, and Jake didn't know what hit him, and he just heard Andre laughing his head off, not realizing what had just happened to him in the corner turnbuckle, which is kind of nasty. You think about it. Andre could be a jerk.
One of those videos too I saw, and he's got Macho Man in the corner and he's just rubbing his ass on his face and watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
So apparently he was not just like the other big guys, but he was skeptical of people because he felt like some guys didn't take the wrestling seriously the way he did, right. And they didn't respect the sort of art form of it, and that's why he would go harder on guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't like Ultimate Warrior either. Couldn't stand that guy. But I think a lot of people didn't like him.
I think that came a lot from, so when he went to Japan, right? He because the Japanese did a very different take than the North Americans did, right? The North Americans were all about the story and the sell, but the Japanese would actually use a lot of real martial arts moves and use them, and they would often train in these dojos and things, so they took it a lot differently, I think, than the North Americans. And I think Andre took a lot of that back with him as a part of the art form and didn't respect the folks that really didn't know how to wrestle.
Yeah, no, that's true. And what I saw of him wrestling, it was like he's just more of an attraction, like he's just a big person. But from what all of the wrestlers who competed against him in his heyday, they said that he was extremely coordinated. He had amazing timing in the ring. Like, he knew what he was doing. It's just that he had to tone it down because it was more interesting to see him just be a Goliath as opposed to being, you know, a guy who could hit you with a drop kick.
And there's that part in the Box Brown book where it's Vince McMahon, I think, or Vince McMahon Sr., who says, he goes, you're not going to do anything anymore. You're not going to move. Like, you're going to be an impenetrable rock. And then this monster. So, like, stop being so, like, you know, you're not doing any kicks. You're not doing any of that type of stuff anymore. Just have guys trying to beat this giant mountain of a man, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think he also told them to hold back, right? Make them want more.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's really changed the style. And he admits that changed the style of how he did things.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the, like, going to the comic? What did you guys think of the art?
Yeah, I was just about to ask that.
Style.
At first, like, my first impression of it is kind of like, what's so special about this? But as I'm reading it, the pacing of it is perfect. And even though the style is very simple and plain, you know exactly who a lot of these characters are. Like, there's no question that it's the Nasty Boys on page 11 or that it's Hulk Hogan. Like, it's very good at distinguishing who is who and little mannerisms that they have, even in this very simple, spare type of style. The pacing of it is really good. And before you know it, you're like 30, 40 pages in, and you've just enjoyed the entire pro. Like, Box Brown is a very good storyteller. I've read some of his other book, Tetris.
Oh, yeah?
And it's just his pacing of how to make it in a way that you understand everything. Especially with wrestling, it could be complicated to explain all the nuances of it. And he does a really good job with his art style and, like, page layouts.
I liked it, too. I thought it actually focused in on what he wants you to focus in. It wasn't distracting with whereas if it was a little bit more, background art or a little bit more realistic, it would sort of take away almost from the story, I think. It's good. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think his art's great. It's that simplistic style, like, just the less is more, and you don't focus on all this, like, fancy rendering or hatching or even, like, extreme dynamic angles. He conveys the information. For something like a biography, it's perfect. And literally, like, just the simple little, like, the way someone will smirk or something like that, he's just subtle enough that it conveys exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah, the expressions I really liked. And even, like, he generally, the way he draws his eyes are just, like, a line and a dot.
But yeah. He's able to do it, so it's like, you know, someone sort of giving him a sideways glance or like a surprised look or an angry look. Like, it's pretty cool the way he uses that simple style to convey these things.
Yeah, and that's harder to do, to use so little and convey so much with it. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, he seems to, I can't say for the other book that you read, but for the Box Brown one, there's almost this, like, sort of tone that Andre is kind of knows his fate, like, even at a young age. And it, like, he seems sort of, like, sad the whole time, or almost just like he knows what's kind of coming and he knows he'll never live like a nice normal life.
I like these ones.
Yeah, that one's really great. Like, and it's that, really again, cool. So simple, but just highlight the, and like just that silhouette and frame of him. Like, but yeah, it's like he really has that, he conveys that sort of like sadness and make you feel sort of bad for Andre the whole time, because as many guys would be like, oh, I'd love to be this giant man, but like it's really quite an inconvenience and you're gonna live a shorter life, right?
Yeah.
So I think you guys should read the other one too. Just to get, I think you'll like it, honestly. It's a little bit different as well, but it's very similar in the key points of the, and that's why I didn't even realize it was a different one when I read it. But the way it started off, and to your point, Shane, it's like he kind of knew what his destiny was going to be. In this one, it sort of starts off, he goes, and I think this is actually a quote from him. He goes, "The internal struggle within all people isn't good or evil. It's between optimism and pessimism. I learned this lesson far too late in life. I've heard that a pessimist believes that memories are only regrets organized in chronological order, and the optimist says that you should be lucky to live long enough to have regrets. Neither view is correct. We live in the border between optimism and pessimism, the darkness and the light. But when you're at the end of the road, you have to learn to let the light in no matter how much it hurts." And then he says, "Lord knows there's been a lot of pain, and Lord knows often I've smiled through it." And that really kind of encompasses his life of pain and trying to make most of his situation, in my opinion. I thought that was a really cool opening.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And he really conveys that in the book too, where Andre's sort of knows his own fate and he seems to see where it's going. So he's just decided that he's going to drink as much wine and beer as he wants. He's going to sleep with as many women as he wants. He's going to try and just enjoy life to the fullest.
And like you said before, like you look at these people who are these enormous individuals that are celebrated, or in his case, a lot of times people were frightened or considered him a freak, but life is so inconvenient once you surpass like 6'5". Like things, everything becomes uncomfortable, and a person like him who just didn't stop growing, he couldn't even do simple things that we just take for granted every day, like finding a seat to just rest on or going to the bathroom. I heard a lot of wrestlers say, like, what was it like traveling with him? The hotels. He's like, he would have to go to the bathroom in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Ugh. Imagine that you're, and it wasn't even because he thought it was funny. It was like nothing could support him. Like he couldn't do normal stuff.
Toilet.
You know, it's like, it's horrible. And then to have to go out there and put a smile on your face because people paid to see you, because, you know, especially like I said before, back then wrestling was kind of like a circus. And then you got this enormous individual no one's ever seen the size of before. It is tough. Like, there was a lot of pain in his life, but it's nice to see too that he'd established like certain friendships with people who really loved him and saw like the good side of him, and always tremendous respect for this guy for what he did.
Yeah, I think, like, so my thing with him was, again, I think, like, you were all around that same age, and probably most people, because that's when wrestling became mainstream, was the him putting Hogan over and turning heel, right?
Right.
And then that's, like, my first interpretation of Andre was he was always a bad guy to me as a kid. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen the baby-faced version of Andre. So I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, he's a big, giant, evil dude. And then I think we all probably, and I'm sure most people realize how much they love him is when you watch Princess Bride and you see him as this
funny
character, right? And I remember being like, oh, okay, yeah, he's not a big angry beast of a man. He's actually like just an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing that I kind of liked about it is it really didn't portray him as the best human either, though. Like, it portrayed him as someone who's, again, going to live his life the best to the fullest. He did a lot for the sport. He was a legend in that regards. You know, he had a lot against him, and he you know, took that and turned it around and made a career out of it. But at the same time, it didn't gloss over the fact that he wasn't perfect. Like, he drank a lot. He treated people not the greatest all the time. There's a great part when a Bad News Brown confronts him.
Yeah.
You know, when he was, you know, saying racial slurs and things like that. And you know, the whole part around, you know, his daughter that he's basically abandoned and things like that. So there are those parts, and they don't gloss over that at all. So I appreciate that about this particular book, right? Actually, yeah, in both books. I thought that was a really cool piece to it.
Yeah, and it makes sense, because if you were the fucking biggest man on earth, this making all this money, or the star attraction, basically doing whatever you want, you'd get into that mind frame where you can literally do whatever you want, like pass out in the hotel lobby and they can't do anything to move him, so they just have to wait till he wakes up. Like, he literally could get away with anything he wanted, because no one could stop him if he really wanted to go. Like, he's just a giant man. So I understand that mentality of not saying what any of the stuff he did was okay. Yeah, using the N-word or being rude to fans or whatever he did. But, like, I get that. I can understand if I was in his shoes that, yeah, you'd probably feel like you can just do whatever the hell you want whenever the hell you want.
Well, the doctors also told him he wasn't living past 40.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, like, I've got these next 10 years, you know, you know, so I'm not going to worry about all the niceties and just make the best out of it and don't care about other things. But yeah, I thought it was good to show both sides of who he was.
And, you know, with that said,
one in the box. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just say, along with what you guys were saying, with that said, there was still, you know, quote unquote growth in him as a human being, because he had that tension with Bad News Brown. And then later on, Bad News Brown, I listened to the actual interview where the information from the book is taken from. And they did bury the hatchet, and he did realize, like, it wasn't right for me to be disrespectful to you. So even with all of his, like, hang-ups and things that he may have been in denial about, like about the daughter not believing it was necessarily his, he did have the intentions to fix things. Like, there was growth in him as a human being, even though he had all of those flaws, which is nice to see too. Sorry, Shane, what were you going to say before I interrupted you?
I was just, did you guys catch that one at the beginning of the Box Brown book when he's a kid and then he can't fit in the school bus, so his dad's friend comes to drive him in the pickup truck, and that's it's Samuel Beckett, like the playwright?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I don't think they say Sam, but he calls him Mr. Beckett, and then he mentions he's like a playwright and stuff like that, and I was just like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I looked it up, and apparently, like, they didn't have like a big bond or anything, but apparently he did a few times drive Andre to school, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool. No, that was cool.
I really liked going back to that portion of the book where it shows the issue that he had with Bad News Brown. I liked how Box Brown set that up on the page when you get to it, where he puts all of the characters there, who each of them are, and then numbers them as to where they're seated on the bus. And then the story ensues. Like, it's just a perfect way for you to feel that you're there. Even though this is a very, like, cartoony, stylized version of the story, you definitely can hear the voices of these guys and, like, oh, yeah, that is him. That is how that guy used to dress. Or seeing where they were on that bus during that story, it's pretty cool. Because when you hear it, the wrestlers tell it, and they say, like, exactly how it's presented on the page. It's nice to – the authenticity of it is really neat.
Yeah, there's also that they do the interview he did on the David Letterman show.
Yeah, that's right.
And I watched the interview, like the live, and I felt like, first, Andre, who was this big performer, he came out and he seemed very uncomfortable, sort of just joking around in front of an audience with Letterman. But then when you read the Box Brown book, he sort of, I mean, and even in the notes later, he says that, like, he based everything in that scene in the book on what he saw in the interview, but then the opinions about how Andre felt that were just sort of his, like, reading into how he acted. And, you know, he just, like, things where Letterman says, you know, what are you going to do after you
retire from wrestling, and he seemed so unprepared, like he'd never even consider that, or what else did he ask? So he just asked him, like, what do you do, like, when you're not wrestling for fun? And he just says, he goes to his ranch in North Carolina and he has cows, but he doesn't like seem prepared at all to, like, his entire life was wrestling, and he never even considered the life that didn't involve being on the road wrestling.
Yeah. Yep. Or that he would even get to that point in life to think about that.
Right? Yeah.
That's the other sad part.
Like, clearly Letterman's trying to set him up to just be like, hey, like, tell us when you drank 119 beers in one sitting, like something funny like that. And Andre's just not really giving him anything, because he just seems it's weird for a guy that can perform in front of, I think at one point they said there was 90,000 people at one stadium that they fought in. But like then he's on the Letterman show and he just doesn't know how to like banter and perform in front of that audience. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the Princess Bride part of the story?
I think like it's the funniest parts of the book are always just how much he drank. You know what I mean? Like, there's always right. like that story where he like Hulk Hogan invited him to an airport, and he was waiting for his layover flight or whatever, and Hulk Hogan bought him beers, and he drank like 70 beers in one sitting or something like that. So all the stories from the like Princess Bride, you're like, oh, the most shocking part is when the bill's $40,000, right? But I mean, I think there's like just nice moments there with like Billy Crystal and what's her name, Robin Wright.
Yeah.
Where he warms up her head, just putting his hand on her.
Yeah. And then just seeing how human he was, like, because in the movie he's this giant man, but then you see, like, when she drops down in his arms and he has to catch her, and he's like, oh, can we lower her down? Because I still have back surgery, like, still kind of hurt from it.
Yeah.
I actually, one of my favorite parts were when he fought the boxer. Webner.
Yes, that's
right. Oh, yeah.
I know the more famous, wrestler versus boxer was the Inoki Muhammad Ali one, but if you actually watch that match, it's kind of crappy. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Awful.
Yeah, so Inoki just kind of crawls around on his back and starts kicking Ali in the legs, right?
Yeah.
But the way that the other match went, it's like, okay, so we're really going to have this guy, and this guy Webner apparently fought Ali to a 15-round loss decision. And they're saying that it was actually the inspiration for the Rocky movie. Mm-hmm. But either way, he ends up sort of taking the match a little more seriously. He's on his feet, and he looks like he's sort of toying with them until he takes a good shot in the face, and then he just like unleashes on this guy. But it really kind of showed that he wasn't just a showman. He was a brawler. Yeah. He was someone that you have to be worried about. But it was cool the way they showed it in the comic too.
And that
was, I didn't realize that was the inspiration. It says that was the inspiration for the Thunderlip scene in Rocky III, and I was like, oh my god, that's like exactly the way that played out. They literally just like translated it, and Hulk Hogan was Andre, and one was there. Like it worked really well. That's just one of those things where you're like, the real life story is so good, you just translate it. You don't have to add anything really. It's almost exactly the way it played out.
But even his story, like the boxer story, is Rocky, because he took some unknown boxer to fight Ali as a champ, and he went 15 rounds and he ended up losing, but he went 15 rounds with the champ. And so, I mean, he was legitimate. Boxer to fight him, and he ended up, again, he was toying with him, and then he decided to we had enough, we're gonna finish this, took him out.
That Andre is actually the inspiration for Tommy Gunn in Rocky V too.
Yeah right. I almost was like, oh really? And then I'm like, wait a second, Tommy Gunn, Rocky V? Yeah, okay. I think it's just so funny how Webner back then, like, he didn't know that what wrestling was, like, there was going to be any sort of selling of it. He went into it fully convinced, like, this was a match. And I remember that being played out in the Rocky movie. I always thought that was hilarious. But to know that it happened in real life, it was like, wow, this guy was fully convinced he had to knock down this giant. He didn't realize that, how different
it
is. That
was in Japan, right? That one?
No, that was here. I'm pretty sure it was here.
That was North America.
Yeah, I guess they just didn't really. I think back then too, like now it's pretty clear that, you know, you watch an MMA fight or a boxing match, you understand that they're really fighting. And when you watch it, a wrestling match, no one's pretending it's real fighting. But I think back then it was a lot of more gray areas with stuff like that. And no one was really clear. And they were still trying to sell wrestling. Like, even though everyone knew it was fake, they were still kind of like, wink, wink, it's real, you know? And I think now, so they probably didn't explain that very clearly to. It was his name, Debner?
Webner.
Webner. Yeah, Chuck Webner, I think. Yeah. But and that's again from the Japanese influence, right? They're even more so again using real maneuvers and everything's predetermined, but they would actually just use real martial arts maneuvers in the ring, and the pacing was a lot different, right? Whereas the pacing in North America was a little different as well. Where it's more sort of storyline and the, you know, who's got the upper hand at what point and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I also go back to the Princess Bride thing for a second. I saw a thing online, which I don't know if it's ever real, but it's one of those stories that you want it to be true. But it was like apparently when they were filming Princess Bride, there was this like long awkward pause where Andre farted for like 17 seconds.
Yeah,
and everyone was just all quiet. And then Rob Reiner, the director, said, "Andre, are you okay?" And he said, "I am now." And then they just kept filming.
Yeah, actually, when Carl Ulz came to Toronto Comic Con, he talked about that story. It's a true thing.
He said, "Everything was not true. You want it to be true."
Yeah,
that's so funny.
And apparently that's what he did to the guys in the corner. Like when he'd have them in the corner of the ring, they would be that long. Like, can you imagine that guy sitting on you for 20 seconds? That's what you have like vibrating in your face. It's horrible from a man that size. You're not going anywhere. You're just accepting it.
That's what I'm saying. He's so big. He can do whatever the hell he wanted.
Yep.
I gotta say my favorite part of this book, I mean, it's probably cliche, but when they go through the match at WrestleMania 3 and explain all of build-up, like the psychological build-up to the storyline with him coming back and going heel, like, you don't realize how masterful all of it was for a match that seems somewhat basic and boring. Like, it's a mastercraft of, I think that's what's missing in wrestling today, is what they accomplished then. And I guess the fact that more people were in the dark maybe about it, but when you see how it's laid out in this book, it makes total sense. Like, it's such a great match.
Cool. Now, I'm getting them a little mixed up, the two books now, but do they go into the $6 million man in the Box Brown book?
$6 million man? You mean the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase?
No, the $6 million man show.
No, I don't think so.
Queen?
Because he played Sasquatch on the show. He was Bigfoot.
Oh, I never seen that show.
Yeah, no. So that was the first time he got a taste of being on television. So on the $6 million man, they dressed him up. You should check it out on YouTube. But he. Sorry, I'm seeing Shane's video. It's like, on the floor. It's distracting.
I'm just doing stuff. I gotta go to work soon because it took 10 hours to set this up.
What time do you go to work, Shane?
I gotta leave at 3.
Okay.
But I still have to walk Riley.
Okay. We'll wrap this up soon.
We'll wrap it up. Anyway, they dress him up as Bigfoot, and that's sort of before the Princess Bride happened. This was sort of his big thing to be on television. But it was actually a very interesting to see because he went through like 10 hours of makeup and things to get all this stuff, you know, ready for this show, and very interesting to see. And people apparently were very scared because he has this big fight with the main star, right, the $6 million man. And I think he was a little worried that Andre was just going to beat him up on the show. But very interesting stuff.
Martin, quite
a light.
Martin keeps making me want to read this other book now because it seems like it's better than the one that we actually read, Shane.
It is.
I don't think it's better. I don't know. No. I really like the Box Brown.
No, you know what? They're both good. They're both very good.
No, I'm playing.
That's fair. I just, what I got a sense was that, I don't know how big of a wrestling fan Box Brown is, but like, he definitely understands wrestling very well, and just kind of conveys like just the lifestyle of the wrestler, not just like Andre, but just like, this kind of speaks to all of those guys that are on the road all the time. Yeah. And just, like, they're like, I mean, they're all big dudes. Andre's especially the biggest of them, but like, there's a reason a lot of them don't live a long time, whether they're like, they're just too big and they have heart attacks, or they're getting addicted to drugs, or just like I've heard stories about Ric Flair and a lot of other guys, and they drink, like, just how like Andre drank. It's just, they're always drinking all the time just to sort of numb the pain of like the road life, and the like, probably, it's probably really lonely a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 100%. I think Box Brown actually is quite a big wrestling fan, because another book he did was the Andy Kaufman story. Oh, okay. And a big feature of that book was the whole thing with Jerry Lawler. So I think it's kind of in Box Brown's, you know, DNA, this wrestling stuff, because he's done a couple now. But when you think of Andre, like, in that match with Hogan, the way it's laid out, and seeing how Hogan had already been a champion for 3 years, which is unprecedented nowadays. Like, you're lucky if you hold it for 3 weeks or 3 months. But for him to have already been a champion for 3 years, but he never really was past the torch until Andre let him be pinned, like, be pinned by Hogan. And Andre had never been a champion. Like, this is a guy who never held the championship, but he was still the person, the guy to give you the, like, okay, you can take over now from what my position. So Hulkamania had already begun, but it took off like a rocket because Andre allowed himself to be pinned. Like, it's pretty incredible to the presence he had, right?
Yeah, and I like the way Box Brown explains sort of the wrestling terminology for, like, I understand it because all my friends are big wrestling fans, but, you know, things where, like, he put him over, like, he put Hulk Hogan over, that means, like, he made him, like, he passed the torch for him becoming the big star.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of times the person that puts you over is usually the person running that match. Like, a lot of the times it was the Ric Flair who, if it wasn't for a Ric Flair, you wouldn't have a Sting. Like, he made those guys who they are. In losing, they actually became superstars. So Hogan was never known for his supreme wrestling skills, but Andre's psychology, kind of like a Jake the Snake, two guys who had never been champions are considered one of the best guys in the ring to work with because of how they laid out the story of it and made you believe it. Like, you really, like, Jake the Snake really made you believe the things that he was doing in there. Like, that DDT looked like it really did paralyze you. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have that now. It wasn't, his high spot was a quick little move that I think he'd stumbled upon by accident. Now you got like this huge choreographed move that really requires the other guy to let you do it to him. Back then,
Do you ever try giving a guy a razor's edge? It's near impossible if he doesn't play along.
Right? But like, Andre stepping on you, like, you can't fake that. A 700-pound person stepping on your spine, like, that is what it is.
Yeah.
Any other...
You ever tried someone a figure four?
Yes, I have. That one
I have. If they don't play along, it's impossible to lock that in.
No, you can do it. You could do it.
No, you can Boston Crab somebody without their participation. But a figure four, you can't do it.
If you try to do a figure four in the traditional way in the ring, yeah. But there's other ways that you can sneak it in if you're just in like a scuffle with growing up with my cousins, we didn't just let each other give each other those moves. But when you snuck it in and cinched it on, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
That figure four hurts hell once you get it on, though.
Right?
Yes, it does.
You know what doesn't work? And they used to say when you flip it over, it like it reverses the pain, but it doesn't at all. Like,
it does. Still
hurts. No, it doesn't.
When I've had it reversed on me, it hurts. Martin, have you ever had it reversed on you? Can you confirm?
I don't think I have.
Oh, Martin just makes him tap out once he cinches it in. That's it.
Yeah.
Martin's just always grabbing the ropes, letting him go. My battery's dying. We use my whole phone battery just to get Martin set up on this fucking thing.
All right.
It was worth it, man. It was worth it.
What would you guys rate this book? Would it be a high recommend list? What would you give it out of 10?
I give it a solid, I give it a 9 out of 10. I loved it. I think the book design is great. I thought just understanding Andre as a human, if people are on the fence, like someone who's not a wrestling fan, it was very good for them. But people who are wrestling fans, they would absolutely love it, right? I think it's a really great book.
Yeah, I agree. I'd give it a 9 as well.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. Like, if it's a wrestling fan, yeah, absolutely, very high. Like, 9, 9.5, right? Yeah. If they're not a wrestling fan, it's still very interesting. A little insight into that world. So it's still very, like, maybe an 8.5 or something for even a non-wrestling fan, because it's really...
I feel like my mom would read this and really enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so too.
But I do recommend both. Like that one and check out Closer to Heaven.
If you, didn't you like read one, the box panel one.
Yeah.
I did. I read both. And right here.
All right. You didn't read it.
I reread it. Both. I actually read this the first time 2 days ago. And this today when I realized I read the wrong one 2 days ago.
All right, guys. Well, Shane, should we wrap it up so you can take out your pup and head on to work?
Yeah, I mean, you guys can keep going without me if you want, but I gotta get to step in here.
So what do we do for the next book club? Whose turn is it to choose?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe we can do Murder Falcon.
Okay.
Have you guys been reading anything lately?
Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon's a good book.
Murder Falcon, the new Daniel Warren Johnson book. Are you up to date on it, Eric? I know you've been reading, right?
No, I have the first issue or two, but I want to read it as one full story. Like, I want to wait for the trade.
I'm buying the singles just because I want to support him, but I want to buy the trade when it's ready. But it's actually very quickly becoming one of my all-time favorite books.
Really?
The concept of it is kind of cheesy, and you would think it would be – like, if anyone else did it, you'd be like, whatever. That's kind of like – trying too hard to be like cool, mixing rock star with monsters, but he pulls it off so well, and his art is so amazing, and it's just like he's such a great storyteller. So I'm loving Murder Falcon right now.
No, that is a very good. He's great. He's a great artist, great storyteller.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. So what are they up to now?
I couldn't find issue 3, so I have issues 1, 2, 4, and 5, but I'm just buying them just to support him. I'll wait
like for him to buy six, it when it's six, all
I think it's six eight. For an arc? I think it's 8 issue altogether, full story. It's a 8 issue story.
So wait till it's done, and we should read.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll let Martin choose the next book club.
I've been reading. I mean, yeah, I'll think about a next book, but lately I've been reading all the new Conan stuff. I usually don't read new books when they come out. I usually wait and find out what's good and then just read that, because I really don't have time to read crap. So, but the new Conan stuff's been pretty good. Really good. Great.
I'm going to wait for a trade too.
Yeah.
I would recommend, so there's two out right now, Conan the Barbarian and Savage Sword of Conan. I would say go with Conan the Barbarian because it's a really throwback to the original Marvel Conan the Barbarian. The Savage Sword is, although it's fine, it's a little bit of a disappointment for me because it doesn't have that Savage Sword feel like the old magazines do, like Cauldron, for example. Okay. It feels more like a regular comic with the name Savage Sword of Conan, right? I find that it's just not as raw as the original one. So, but definitely the Conan the Barbarian and the covers, Esad Ribic does the covers for Savage Sword. They're amazing. And
is Ron Garney doing the art inside?
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. And then Alex Ross is doing the Conan covers.
Wow. I don't like Alex Ross's Conan covers.
No, I like them. I think they're pretty cool. But
I don't like when Alex Ross does stuff that he clearly doesn't have like a childhood affinity and like love for. When he does it, you can clearly see that he's just doing it sort of like for a paycheck. He doesn't really care that much. Like when you see him do a Spawn cover, you're like, this isn't that good, because he clearly doesn't love Spawn the way he does like a Superman or Batman or something.
Right.
Oh, and that's fair. I mean, even bad Alex Ross is still pretty good. But the Esad Ribic ones are amazing.
Made to do Conan.
Yeah, so, totally. And I believe that Jim Zub is taking over soon. One of the titles as a writer. And the other title, Meredith Finch, I believe, is taken over. So I'm curious to see where that turns. But I'm enjoying both. Pretty good.
Okay.
I haven't read it. Yeah.
What are you reading, Eric?
I've been doing a lot of like back catalog reading. So I was reading like the 52 series. I've never read that before in trade.
I knew you were gonna say some nonsense DC shit.
I read Mr. Miracle. That was fantastic. The
I'm Mr. reading Justice Society.
No, Mr. Miracle from Tom King was one of the best things I've read in a like. I can't think of many things better than that book.
I read the first like three, and it was really good. But I haven't read the whole thing yet.
That's tremendous. That was a tremendous book.
It is really good, actually.
Yeah, I highly recommend that because it doesn't even. It's got the DC lore to it, but it doesn't. Mess with continuity at all. Like you don't got to be reading anything DC to read this book. It's great, really good.
Okay, so maybe the next book club we'll do, we'll pick a trade that we all have or want to read or something, or we're all really into.
Okay, all right, sounds good. We'll see what something we all have on our shelves.
But before that, Critters.
Critters. Okay, we gotta do that. Daph J will definitely be on that one.
All right, we'll do a watch and a review. Awesome. I can't wait to hear Shane's review of Critters.
Can you actually stop tagging me in that shit? Like every time I get a notification, I get excited, and then I'm like, it's a fucking Critters. Unfortunately, they're actually going to send me something cool, and it's just Critters. It's
unfortunately, I can't stop.
Can't stop.
Actually, you know what? Thing. I didn't realize how much Critter shit is out there until I started tagging you with it all.
Yeah, I didn't realize either.
It's amazing. There's like t-shirts and.
Will you watch it, Shane? Will you give it a chance, even if it's just to like crap on it?
I promise you, I'll never watch it ever.
You can still do a review. You don't have to watch it.
Yeah,
I'll review it right now. It sucks. It's garbage.
We'll have on the CD,
we're in Sarnia. What?
Well, point, counterpoint. We'll have Daphne versus Shane.
So I was telling Eric when we were in Sarnia, we saw this fucking band. They were called Volk, V-O-L-K, and it was just a duo. It was this like dude with a big tassel-y, like leather jacket, like a cowboy, and he was just killer on the guitar. And then the lead singer was the drummer, and this just chick. She had the best voice ever, and she was singing and drumming. So I bought the CD, and then because they're so good. But check their Facebook page if you're listening. Like Volk, they're so good. They're my new favorite band. Hold on, look, I'm showing you guys the CD I bought.
Wow. Nice.
Very nice.
But they were so good. I'm going to send you guys the link after to watch their video. They're like my new favorite thing.
All right. Yeah, my buddy just is actually releasing an album today too, so I'll probably do something about that as well. It's some of the music that I've been playing on the podcast at the beginning.
Yeah.
The album's coming out today, 420, so he's bringing it out today.
420, let's get it.
No, but I don't know. He was actually planning to do it before, but a little comic tie-in. He's been waiting a long time to get his cover done, and I actually introduced him to Mike Ruth's Erica.
Yeah.
To do the cover. So she did the cover for him, and that's how they were able to get this out a lot sooner than they're planning to, because she did a great job on the cover. So
she got me to do the cover. I did the cover of Eric. Well, Oz.
That's right.
It was all the elements were created already, so it wasn't really an RP. It was more putting the elements together on the cover, so it wasn't actually drawing stuff. But yeah, I would have thrown some recommends your way.
No, don't do that. What's the name of that band? Your friend's band?
The Heretics.
The Heretics?
Yes.
Heretics.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Okay, I want to hang up now.
All right. Thank you guys for doing this. Shane, have a good day at work and charge your phone before you go. Thank you, Martin, for figuring out your technical issues. Bye, Shane.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, Martin. Right. It's been a blast.
No,
all right, bro. We'll talk later.
All right. Get ready. Get ready for Critters.
Critters up next. All right.
All right. Later.
Later. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Cave of Solitude. Thank you to Shane and Martin for coming onto the show to discuss the Box Brown, Andre the Giant, the life and legend of Andre the Giant. Really fun book. Highly recommend it. Hit up your local comic book shop. If you are in the GTA, you can always go to Cyber City Comics, my home comic shop, and tell them that The Cave of Solitude sent you and that you want to read the Box Brown, Andre the Giant graphic novel. So leave us a review on iTunes. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram as well. And stay tuned for more features and episodes coming your way from us at The Cave of Solitude, the Fastball Special, and I'm trying to think of any other podcasts I might be featured on, and possibly Comic Shenanigans from my good friend Adam Chapman at the Comic Shenanigans. This is Eric Anthony signing off. Thank you again, everybody, for listening.